All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Can you see it? Did you know
this? Checked, but the puck comes right to Pettersson, who tries a bank pass for Besser. In with a shot, he scores!
A moment's notice. Adams leaves
to the line. Hughes jars.
Yes, existence. Take you to the sun.
First career NHL goal. Quinn Hughes makes it 1-0.
You're listening to Canucks Conversation.
Quinn Hughes beat reporter here. Like, I won't cover the Canucks. Yeah. I cover Quinn Hughes and what he's doing to the Canucks.
A member of the Nation Network of Podcasts and delivered by DoorDash.
Just wave the guy and get Demko involved. I wanted him in and down.
Wow. We should do a radio show together. Right on. I want to fist bump you right now.
What I'll have.
Pearl steals, cutting in, shoots, scores!
Don't waste all the good stuff on the off air. Let's go.
Hello, Canucks fans, and welcome back to another episode of the Canucks Conversation, brought to you by the great folks at Zephyr Epic. You can use promo code HOCKEYSEASON, capital H, capital S, all one word, at ZephyrEpic.com, Z-E-P-H-Y-R, Epic. Go check them out on all platforms. That promo code, HOCKEYSEASON, will get you $5 off your order. They also ship free anywhere in Canada.
Give me two cities.
Orders over $50, all the way from Thunder Bay to Sycamoose.
No, they have to start with the same letter.
What?
Yeah.
I never noticed the whole that point was a thing of it. You did. Okay. Well, that's we are also delivered to you by the great folks at DoorDash. Use promo code CONVODD, capital C, capital D's, all one word, CONVODD. That will get you 25% off and free delivery on your first order. Folks, seriously, if you haven't yet, go download DoorDash, make an account. You're saving money. You're saving money. Does not get much better than that, folks. My name is David Quadrelli. I am joined, as always, by the man who built the place, wearing his tailored jeans, Chris Faber, and Harmon Dial, who's also in jeans. How's it going, folks?
From Thunder Bay all the way to Tofino.
Okay.
That's how you do it.
From Vancouver to Vaughan.
Oh, that's better. That's good too. Because you're not getting the alliteration with Thunder Bay. Do you know what alliteration? You know what alliteration
is. I know what it don't. This is, I don't want to start. You two freaking smartasses come in here. I don't want to deal with this right off the bat.
That sounded way meaner than it was. Yeah. You just looked at me confused, so I wanted to make sure.
I know what alliteration is. I know what a verb is.
I didn't for a while. Like, way longer than
I should.
Yeah,
you don't know how to do long division, so you try and come in here and make me look stupid.
Look, I don't have to do long division for my job, okay?
Wait, you don't know how to do long division?
No, you didn't hear this story? Weren't you on the... Okay, I guess you weren't on the episode. I told this on the last episode. I just sat out the long division part of, like, grade 7, grade 8 when you're doing long division.
You, like, sat out.
So I got sick, right? And I didn't go to school. And then I, like, got sent home with, like, practice for it, and I never really did it. And then I just, you know, in my head, I was like, well, like, you can't fail grade 7, right? Like, you're going to go to high school regardless. And I was like, you know, I was already, like, in English honors in high school. Like, I was ready for that, right? Like, you know, that was going to be my thing, right, from when I was a kid. So I, like, just... I did the long division test and I think I failed it. And it was so late in the year because I was doing a test like to make up for it because I was sick. My teacher was just like, yeah, like, I don't, yeah, it's fine. Like, whatever.
I've got a really funny grade 7 math story too. So I did not like paying attention in school to math. I was pretty decent at it. So what I decided to do was I spent 2 weeks in winter break in grade 7 and I did the homework for the entire year. Like, I went through every chapter, like, just went through the entire textbook and just, like, grinded it out. And for the rest of the year, for the next 6 months, I did absolutely nothing in math class. And I just, like, I literally just handed in my homework to the teacher. I was like, I'll do the tests and that's it. Like, I'm not, like, I'll stare at you blankly and pretend I'm paying attention, but this is it.
Boy, man. Genius. I love it. Work smarter, not harder. That's fantastic.
That's kind of why people can't see us, but that's why we have the F up there, because I also never learned how to write in cursive.
Yeah, that's on the left there. That's how you properly write an F.
We tweeted this out.
Yeah, we already tweeted this picture out, but that's how Chris writes an F. And his name, his signature, has an F in it, and it looks like that. For those that haven't seen it, go to the Canucks Combo Twitter account.
I would have, now that I know Harm was a super genius back in... In elementary school,
are
too.
We surprised?
I would have no, but I would have liked to give Harm a run for his go in quick multiplications when I was in grade 7 in my peak.
I've lost all that skill now, but like up to anything, but anything up to 19 times 9, like you could drop 13 times 7, and I would just like off the top of my fingers know that.
Yeah, I used to be. I feel like I still could if we set up a.
You'd be better at me now. I was good up to
like 2020, like to 20 times 20.
Ooh, that's good.
Yeah, that I was like back in the day. Like
that's
I was
nuts.
I could I like maybe do 12, like tops.
Yeah. Well, I think I could do all those instantly.
No chance.
You could beat me so then bad, if you could do up to 20 times 20.
There was this one kid, Namfam. In grade 7, he was the guy who gave me a run. And, like, he was the smartest kid in everything. He was the smartest kid in, like, all of, like, elementary school. And the only thing I could beat him in, the only time anyone ever beat him in, was me on multiplications one time. And the day that I beat him, I remember, like, I don't think I got suspended, but I definitely got in trouble because I told him to suck it after I beat him on, like, because you had to finish the page and, like, hand it in. And I beat him to the front of the class, handed it in. I told him to suck it, and I think I got sent to the office or something.
I'm losing it how you said his name. It was just freaking Nam-Fam. We gotta clip that. We gotta get a Nam-Fam button for the board.
Nam's brother's name was Lam-Fam, and his dad owned a jewelry shop in Nanaimo, Sonny's Jewelry.
Oh,
shout out to them. Right beside the Landlubber, actually.
Wow. Yeah. So we went from Suck It Nam-Fam to shout out to their family jewelry shop.
And then just to the Landlubber, and they're delicious. I'll tell you, Landlubber, former sponsor of the show. Delicious. The stuffed tater tots at the Landlubber, man.
Whole, what are they stuffed with?
People know it's sour cream, bacon, cheese, ooh, green onion. And they're kind of like, they roll. It's just shredded potatoes that they roll around all that stuff. And then they're kind of, they're almost like a half hot dog kind of. That's just a stuffed tater tot. I tell you, boys, one day we got to get an island trip going. I'll show you guys the sights. We'll go to the Landlubber. That's about it. In Nanaimo, actually, they won't be very long.
Oh, man.
We can literally do this. We can do like a ferry trip and like come back at night.
Have you ever been to the Nanaimo boat race?
Oh, my God. What did you just say?
Isn't it called the boat race?
The bathtub races?
Oh, yeah.
The boat. Anyone from Nanaimo just lost all respect for you.
You know what I'm talking about.
We know the bath. I'll tell you.
So how many bathtub races have you been to?
Every single one.
Have you ever competed in one?
No, I've never competed, but my buddy won 3 years in a row.
So how do you go about competing in that? Like, do you have to bring your own? Is it BYOB?
You got to be grandfathered in. Your dad had to race a bathtub for you to get in the bathtub races. Well, not really, but
do you actually
best racers.
You build your own bathtub or what?
I mean, it's not really a bathtub. It's not an actual bathtub. It's the size of a bathtub.
Oh.
It's like a boat. Like, it's like a very small speedboat.
Oh.
And they rip. Like, they have huge motors. Not huge motors. They have big motors for the size of the little boat. And the race used to be unreal. And honestly, man, people in Nanaimo know this. Like, the best time to be downtown is the bathtub races beer gardens, because like there's music going on all day. The beer gardens takes up the whole waterfront. It's this huge area and everyone's down there. Everyone's parents are down there. Everyone's uncle's down there. It's a blast. A bathtub weekend is unreal in Nanaimo.
In my head, up until now, I was imagining that people actually bought bathtubs
like a bathtub with like an electric motor and they just putts
literally
around.
Yeah, I thought they had to build it.
No, dude, they are like fast little boats and they rip through all the tide, like through all the waves and everything. It's a good, they've had to cancel it a couple times because like people were almost dying out there because it was like a windy day and the little bathtub boats are so small and light. They've had to cancel it or postpone it a day, and it sometimes they postpone it, then you get another day of drinking at the beer garden, so you get the Monday out of it sometimes.
Wow, that sounds like a lot of fun. Hey, we just came from the
Nanaimo bars come out, like everybody's got their, you know, trying to flex how good their Nanaimo bars are around places. All the food trucks are out. I tell you, man, it's the one of the best weekends in Nanaimo, because the thing is, like, you know, so many, when you grow up in Nanaimo, you know so many people in the town, and then you like everybody's parents are at the same thing. Everyone's like, it's just good. It's like the one thing that really brings all Nanaimo together.
So we'll go for a weekend in Nanaimo. We'll go watch the bathtub races. We'll
the
go
boat
to,
races, you call it.
Yeah, the boat races. Jeez, we'll go to Nam Fam's Jewelry.
Sonny's Jewelry.
Yeah, we'll go to the Landlubber as well. But we just came from the Parallel 49 Street Kitchen. Don't want to spend too much time talking about it, but we love our sponsors there. You'll hear an ad for them in the halfway point. They've got the Oktoberfest stuff going on right now. What did you have today?
I had a Schnitzelwitch. What am I trying to say here?
I don't
Schnitzel
know.
Witch. That's what it was called. It was a schnitzel sandwich.
Okay. And?
I actually, even when I ordered it, I said, did I say that right? She said, yeah. And I was like, perfect. I'll say it on the podcast. And then I just screwed it up there.
And what'd you think?
It was good, man. I haven't had schnitzel in so long that I forgot what schnitzel even tastes like.
I didn't know what it was till today.
Yeah, I had to explain to you what it was. But I'll tell you what I had there. I had a buttermilk coleslaw at Parallel 49th Street Kitchen. That was bomb. I was telling you guys, like, I hate cabbage more than the rest. Like, the worst food I think in the whole world is cabbage rolls. Cabbage rolls is the most disgusting food that I've ever seen in my life. But I like coleslaw, and that's all cabbage. So it's not like it's just something about the cabbage rolls, I think. But I had coleslaw today. I like how the thing I like about coleslaw is it's so thin. I like my salads like really thin. People that give you a big chunky Caesar salad, it's like the size, you know, the size of like your phone with one piece of lettuce.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
ridiculous.
Yeah.
I always cut my real nice and thin.
Nice. Excellent. I had a warm pretzel and that was fantastic.
The pretzel looked really good.
Pretzel was very good.
Harm had the sandwich. He didn't listen. He obviously doesn't listen to the ads. And the ads, I tell you got to swap out the jalapenos
for the
pickles. I told
him
he didn't
want it. He didn't want it. The jalapenos.
Can we address the ketchup situation that Harm had?
A modern day John Garrett. I didn't know this about you. You like ketchup on everything.
Oh, dude, I have the palate of a 12-year-old. Like, I love chicken strips. I honestly, anywhere I go, you could offer me this and be like, Harmon, for the rest of your life, any restaurant you go to, you can only have a chicken sandwich or a burger, nothing else. And I would be like, you know what? I'm totally fine. Like, I really don't care.
As
long as I get some ketchup on it.
But like, Harmore does the chicken sandwich, got like all the nice sauce on it, the good little, you know, the lettuce mix in there, the jalapenos, everything's all set. It's a perfect sandwich. And Harm goes up and orders a glob of ketchup and just plops it right on top of the chicken. And just what the hell is going on? You took two bites, like two little nibbles I saw, and then you're like, I got to get some ketchup. We're like, what are you doing?
It just kind of tastes dry without Ketchup. I don't know.
Oh, interesting. Sponsors aren't going to like that.
Oh, whatever. Right there.
No, it tastes amazing with ketchup.
Yeah, the Harmon recommendation is go put ketchup on it. I remember last year, Gemma Carson-Smith was just absolutely appalled in the press box when she like was talking about food with Harmon and I, and then Harmon and I were both like, yeah, neither of us eat vegetables. She's yeah, like, what? How can you just write off vegetables?
I shake them up like in a veggie.
I've come around on that since we had this conversation with Gemma, because that was last year.
I can't eat. I just drank all my veggies.
Oh, I was confused. Like literally just like put them in like a Tupperware and shook them up.
No.
Like, actually, you know, carrots taste a little bit better when they're shaken a little bit.
Shaken, not stirred.
Yeah.
Okay, this is a Canucks podcast. We've gotten 15 minutes without even mentioning the team we cover.
Whoops.
but believe it or not, this is Canucks Conversation. We have a little clip that we're going to play. We have a lot of topics to get to. The first one that I wanted to bring up was, another lighthearted one. At training camp, Brock Besser was calling Nick Petan Petey. So I asked Elias Pettersson about it today. We have that clip here.
Summer again.
Elias, have you been made aware that Brock was calling Nick Petan Petey while you were away?
I saw something, or someone tagged me or something, that Brock called Petan Petey. Didn't click the video. Didn't want to think it was true. But so, yeah, I'm sure he is in his proudest moment. But
that last week we saw you with the fresh Nike Dunks, six shoes, the new contract sign. Are we going to see more new shoes, more nice fits?
Well, I mean, it's dress shoes and suits the game, so I don't know when I'm going to show them. But I mean, I like sneakers. Whenever I feel like getting a new pair, I'll get a new pair. But I have a few pair at home.
Yeah, we also just let Harmon's clip run through, which was awesome. Awesome question from Harmon. It was funny. Like, Harmon doesn't come to a lot of morning skates and practices. So the fact we were both there sitting next
Harmon
to each other.
Harmon goes to a lot.
I make it out a decent amount. Sometimes.
When I'm there, Harmon's there.
You're rarely there either.
That's what I'm saying.
You know what? I think we end up going on opposite days. Me and you, Quads.
That makes sense. But it was so funny because we were there at the same time, and you asked that question, I asked this one, and it was pretty funny because we were hearing it from the other media. The Gen Z reporters were asking.
Look at these kids in here talking about dunks and
talking about sneakers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Old media did not like that.
No, they didn't.
No, I thought they...
Yeah, no, I'm just joking. we're just talking about PJ when we say old media.
Yeah.
He's the dad of the group.
Oh, absolutely. Hey, before we get too deep into this, I feel like we should have addressed this at the top of the show, but...
Oh, yeah, we have a radio show.
We have kind of a big announcement for maybe like people that haven't seen on Twitter. I just remembered we're going to be on Sportsnet. Starting next Saturday, Quads and I were offered a 3-hour time slot. We can explain it here better than we can on Twitter, actually. Yeah, yeah. So the deal with the show, it's going to be called The Warm-Up with Faber and Quads. It's going to be the 3 hours leading into the pregame show. So if there's a game on Saturday and say it's at 7, the pregame show starts for that at 6 on Sportsnet 650. And we're going to be, we're going to start at 5, 4, 3. We're going to start at 3, right? 3, 4, 5. Yeah, we're going to start at 3. I should have written this out a little bit. So we'll do 3 hours going into the pregame show. And then when there's not games on Saturdays, we're just going to have 3 hours of like whatever the hell we want to do on Sportsnet. It's going to be a hell of a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Totally interactive. I'm very excited because that's not really an element we get on the podcast. And doing everything live will be super fun. We're going to check ourselves a little bit, eh? Because, you know.
I'll tell you, who needs to get checked? Our freaking Twitter accounts from Twitter Verified already.
What do you mean? Oh, it needs to
get
verified?
It'd be nice to get a blue check.
Yeah. Anyway.
I'll talk to my Sportsnet people.
It's kind of off topic. But anyway.
Saying, I thought that was a good transition.
Yeah, but I wasn't done finishing what I was saying,
right.
And I don't even remember what it was. Oh, yeah, I was going to say, like, there's probably at least once a month where one of us, usually you, says something and we have to stop the recording and be like, you can't say that.
Ooh. Yeah, good point.
I'm
even more careful on the radio.
That's good. Actually,
you know what I said the other day on the radio? Which I don't know, maybe no one got it, but I was like, I played Rick Astley, Never Gonna Give You Up. And I was like, this guy's got soul. It's like a ginger with soul. You'll love to see it. I said that on the radio the other day. And then I didn't even know what I said wrong there. And then I was like, oh, crap. And I was like, But no one said anything.
No one texted in?
No one texted in.
Nice.
So I was all clear there. I had a, man, I tell you, they always say like, man, I had a, just a hell of a playlist the other day when I was producing. Just fire music all the time. Finish with Rick Astley, Never Gonna Give You Up at the end. Hell of a way nice. To go out.
My all favorite right. is you playing No Air.
Yeah, that one was
not well received.
When the station shut down or station went down for like 40 minutes, I came back with Jordan Sparks, No Air. No what? I got a text from the boss that you can't play No Air after we had No Air. It was perfect.
Oh man.
It literally the way that the song starts, like, tell me how you're supposed to be with no air. It's like, that's what we came back with.
Oh, man.
After just having nothing.
Oh, that is so funny.
So that was a good...
Hey. Was that C-Mac or was that still... Was that Art at that time?
I don't want to get into who was mad at me at Sportsnet, but it wasn't C-Mac, I'll tell you that.
That's too bad.
I didn't have a lot of conversations with C-Mac when he was at 650.
That tweet you posted was so funny.
Okay, let's talk some Canucks here. Enough.
Yeah, we're like 20 minutes. I haven't even
damn
talked
it,
Canucks.
This should have just been the Patreon.
Yeah, no kidding.
All right, Pettersson and Hughes back in the lineup. Love to see it. I tell you, like, man, Canucks hockey is so much better with these two in the lineup. Just to see... Not only like what the power play looks so different, but just little things like Pettersson on the board battles. Like, I forgot how good Pettersson just is with like controlling the puck in such tight spaces on the boards. And obviously seeing Quinn Hughes move around the puck. And like I said on the podcast a couple weeks ago when you and I were arguing, Pullman and him makes a lot of sense. We've seen that. It sounds like that's what it's going to be like moving forward. Travis Green answered, well, I asked him two questions about that the other night. And I've heard people online now, they're like, sometimes Fabry, you only ask questions so that you can prove Quad's wrong in an argument that you have. And I said, well, when I'm that right, yeah, I'm going to get confirmation from the coach in an argument that I'm having with Quad. So maybe I did a little bit of that the other night, but you know, he really liked that pairing together. But I want to start with Pettersson, just like getting him back in the lineup, man, I forgot how much of an impact the guy really makes just in little things.
Absolutely. And I think the best part about him and Hughes signing and being with the team are people that were trying to convince themselves that, yeah, if these guys hold out, everything will be fine. Like, they're replaceable. Like, they're getting too greedy. And all these people that were like talking bad about them online being like, ah, we don't even need them. Like, yeah, you do. Like, the Canucks absolutely need these guys. And it's absolutely apparent through one game and like a morning skate. And it's awesome to see Pettersson back on the ice because, like you said, it's just you almost forget. And I think it partly is because he only played like 30 games last year, missed the final 30 games last year. You know, I think we kind of did forget just how much of an impact he makes in all areas of the ice. And it's apparent right away. Like, he just looks different out there.
Yeah, and I think just to get him back in the lineup was huge. And I know, like, I don't know what harm you thought about the lines today, because like just seeing the way that it was mixed up, I don't know how I feel about Chiasson being a guy potentially playing with Pettersson on opening night, but you don't think that's actually going to be what we see, do you?
I mean, they apparently sounded like they looked pretty good together the other night, so maybe it's a look that they're considering. But yeah, I mean, I imagine if I were a betting man that they go Garland, Pettersson, Besser. And then they already like Pearson, Horvat, Hoglander, and then that leaves you JT Miller centering a third line, and we'll see what direction they go in. I think quite clearly at this point, I think Nick Petan is making the team. I think that based off the amount of opportunities he's had, and he's had 4 points in 4 preseason games, I think he's done enough for the coaching staff to give him a look. Personally, I'm not the biggest fan of Nick Petan. I think, you know, we'll see. Maybe the Canucks can catch lightning in a bottle, but I think that definitely seems to be a potential pairing there. And then we'll see who lines up on the right wing, whether it's someone like Chiasson or a Pod Colson. But I think that's, we're starting to see the skeleton of the top nine really come to shape with Pettersson returning in the lineup, and especially on the power play. I mean, watching PP1 snap the puck around and just having the threat of Pettersson's shot back, it just adds another, dynamic layer. And this is one thing I want to talk to you guys about. Like, and I'm sure we're going to talk about Alex Chiasson as well pretty soon, but you know, obviously Brock Besser's been out and Chason's gotten these looks on PP1 net front. What if they just keep Chiasson on power play one and move Besser to the second unit? And then that second unit has, say, like Garland on his left flank, Besser on his downhill side on the right wing, Hoglander on the bumper, Pearson net front, OEL manning the point. Like, that's a pretty solid second unit. I don't know how I feel about, you know, whether Chiasson should be on the top unit or not, but I'm curious to get your guys' thoughts.
You heard Quinn Hughes say the other night, though, like, that I think his exact quote was that goal doesn't go in without Chiasson screening like that.
Yeah.
And he said, like, he was very, like, very positive towards
high praise.
He literally said, like, we haven't had a guy in front of the net like that before, and, like, had very high praise for him in that moment. But to me, like, this, you know, and that second unit that you just floated out there, Harm, what's your thoughts on a second unit without a center? Because it, to me, like, I wrote about it last week about Horvat being the guy that dropped down, and people were like, why the hell would it not be Miller? If you're going to drop a center off, it's obviously not going to be Pettersson. Horvat's the guy leading in goals, but when I looked at power play points over the past 2 years, I was kind of shocked to see that JT Miller has 43 power play points. Second in the last 2 years has 28 in Elias Pettersson.
He's the primary, like, play initiator, right?
So is he more important than Horvat, who obviously their number one play is a bumper shot from Horvat, but because of Miller putting up so many points, to me it makes sense that Horvat would be the guy to drop down.
Guess who leads the team in power play goals over the last 2 years?
Yeah, 18 with Horvat.
Yeah, and he's like, he's their primary weapon where, you know, I've used this analogy before, but Pettersson's presence is, he almost serves as like as gravity, where it's like in the NBA when you have an elite three-point shooter like Steph Curry on the floor, it just, it opens up the space for other players, because whether it's Pettersson's shot or like Curry's shot, like, if you're a penalty kill planning against Vancouver's top power play unit, guarantee you the first thing that they're saying when pre-scouting is, if there's one threat that we absolutely cannot let the Canucks have, it's that Pettersson one-time bomb. And so obviously, since you have the man advantage, the Canucks, as a next move, kind of, they think, okay, we'll just use Horvat in the bumper. And I just think that's been working for them really well. So honestly, I would want both Miller and Horvat on the top unit. I think in 2019-20, when they had a top five power play in the league, I thought that looked really, really good. And, you know, it is an interesting point about having no center in the second unit, but I'm curious to think, how often are they even going to have to take draws? A lot of times in the second unit, steps over the boards, it's on the fly. So
I always think that that's kind of over. Like, people overthink that. Like, oh, you need a center on the second power play unit. They're never going to ice the puck. You're never going to have a defensive zone face off. Your goalie's not going to cover it.
Yeah.
But it just, like, does it not just feel a little dirty? Like, not having a center on the ice?
But you could also just do, like, ask one of Miller or Horvat to take the draw, win the draw, get off the ice.
Right. And that was kind of why I brought up, like, you're not, like, the only chance would be if you ice the puck on the second power play unit. What's that going to happen once this year, maybe once or twice? That's why it's not the biggest deal to me either. It's just, like I said, it doesn't feel right not having a center on the ice, especially when you're loading up that first unit with three. But to counterpoint what you said about Horvat being the most important, you know, piece, or not, you know, he's saying a huge piece.
The one that feasts as a result of Pettersson creating that space.
The thing that I also found shocking the last 2 years was that he only has one primary assist as well. So yes, he's got the 18 goals because he's the trigger man. But how many other people could be the trigger man? The way that I presented it in the article earlier this week was like, hey, you can have two different times where you can have a one-timer opportunity. If you use Garland and Miller as the bumper net front and they're rotating, when the puck's on the right on Pettersson's side, Garland comes up to the bumper. He's a one-time shot right there. When the puck goes over to Besser's side on the left, Miller goes to the bumper. He's got a one-time shot there. So to me, like, that's why I kind of opened up the idea of it being Horvat, just because of how much Miller can do on the power play.
I like the, well, from my perspective, I think the bumper's more effective when, like, it's more of a dangerous option when the puck carrier is on his downhill side. So for instance, with, you know, you mentioned Pettersson and Garland and being able to have that one-time threat there, 100%, but it's a little bit different when you're on your offside in that sort of sequence. Whereas if you're Miller, what tends to happen, the advantage of being downhill is, yes, you don't have the one-timer threat for someone like JT Miller on that left flank. But when you're coming downhill, the defenders and the penalty killers, because of your body position, they don't know if you're going to shoot or if you're going to pass. And, like, it's that deception and them not knowing how you're going to attack and being able to build speed that I think legitimizes the one time in the bumper that much more. And
that's also a very different angle too, like you mentioned.
Yeah, if
you
are going different. Yeah, I think it's just a lot easier to slide it and create that one timer when it's on your, when Miller's coming down his strong side to Horvat as opposed to, say, Pettersson on the right flank trying to feed Garland.
The other spot that it comes from, and Quads, we've talked about Chiasson a little bit, potentially being a power play one guy. Another thing that's been done so well is the pass from Miller down to the guy down low quickly to Horvat's stick and shoots. Can Chiasson make that play, though? Because that's a huge piece of their offense. It's it's literally the number one thing that they try and, like, yes, they try and feed Pettersson a lot, but there's probably more attempts to Horvat.
So can Chiasson make that play? That's the question. And based on training camp and the preseason that I've seen, I'm going to say no. Based on talking to my Oily Boys in Oilers Nation there.
What the frickin' Oily Boys?
Yeah, that's what they call themselves, the Oily Boys.
What did they lose a bet or something? Are you kidding me?
No, I'm dead serious. The Oily Boys at Nation Network. Anyway, I was talking to them. And
there's some weird people out in Edmonton, man. I'm just going to come out and say it. And our Calgary listeners, and we got a lot of them, they'll appreciate that. There's some weird people out there in Edmonton.
Anyway, I was talking to Bag Milk at Oilers Nation. I was just like, man, like, I'm watching Chiasson. How did he score goals on the power play? And he's just like, honestly, he would just stand there with his stick on the ice and Connor, and he knew exactly where Connor and Leon wanted him to be. And they would put the puck on his stick. And even if it was like in skates or in traffic, he was so good at finding a way to put it in the back of the net. And that's how he had that success. Now, can Chiasson shoot from that far out at the bumper position? I don't know. Not with the same proficiency and success as Bo Horvat, I think. Like, one thing Horvat's really good at is those quick snapshots and, like, picking his spot on those shots. I just haven't seen that from Chiasson to say with confidence.
Yeah, no, what we're asking is if he can, like, if he can make that pass, though.
Mm.
Like, because you know how they do that pass?
Yeah, the tic-tac-toe, like the triangle.
The Miller to somebody quickly up to Horvat.
Oh, Toffoli used to chase on the trigger man.
No, hell no.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's like no chance that's going
to
happen. No, keep
him, but the net front guy has to be able to make that pass, it feels like, right?
Yeah, but can Chiasson do that?
That's what I'm asking you. That's what I just asked you.
again, same premise. I don't think he can, based on what I've seen at camp and preseason. Like, he looks really bad in the October 3rd game. He looked awful. He looked better last night, don't get me wrong. And, you know, this is coming out on Saturday, but Thursday night's game, he did look better. I just, man, I honestly, I don't know. Like, I'm not comfortable shaking up the power play unit, like, kind of for the same reason Harmon alluded to there. It's just like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And now, you know, even without Besser on that second unit, you know, you have a legit second unit, whether that be Jack Rathbone, OEL, or even both on that power play unit. Like, you've got a legit quarterback for sure, at least in Jack Rathbone, and they've been using him in that spot. That is a second unit that is hands down the best second unit that they've had under Travis Green, like without a doubt.
Yeah, no, I agree with that for sure, too. I just, the second unit, like if you do put Chiasson in there, is it like you mentioned Besser? I would say Horvat. Do you have a different name? Like, or is this like
just who would slide down to the second unit?
Who would come off the first unit?
Like Chiasson. I would take Chiasson off it.
I don't think my guess, if I were a betting man, is again, I'm not saying this because I know something. I'm just trying to think it through logically. I just think that they'll keep Chiasson on the top unit, bump Besser down. I think that's what
I think that's probably what's going to happen as well.
Think Besser, you guys both think Besser is going to
I think that's what's going to happen. I don't agree with it. I don't think Chiasson should be on that first unit.
The one interesting thing is you mentioned Chiasson's ability to tip pucks. And, like, I wonder, like, I'm just thinking it through. Like, Chiasson, he may not have the playmaking below the goal line that Toffoli did, but I think for so long the team has been trying to get a right shot to work in that net front kind of position. I think Brock Besser was kind of learning that spot. Still don't think that
Toffoli just for that little bit, right?
They
liked him right there.
But, so my point is, I don't think they see Besser as a perfect fit there. I think they prefer him on the flank, and you kind of need a right shot there for them to do like some of their other looks. It just works better handedness wise. And so anyway, with his ability to tip pucks, like I wonder about Pettersson when he does have the puck on his on the right flank. Like he's so good at. He's going to draw the eyes of the penalty killers with the threat of a shot. I wonder if it'll open up Pettersson's playmaking in terms of like how many like not slap passes necessarily, but quick strike, just like flat on the ice, hard sort of tip opportunities. Is he going to be able to fire that Chiasson can kind of tip home? So, I mean, I'm curious to see how it kind of ultimately looks. But I think, yeah, Chiasson's fundamentally going to work as a different sort of piece compared to obviously what Toffoli was, but he might be effective there. I mean, he was genuinely pretty good there for Edmonton's top unit for a while.
The thing about Chiasson is going to be interesting. It's like, we're talking about a guy potentially being on the first power play unit. And I think we're all in the camp that Chiasson is going to make this team.
Yeah.
And he is going to be on the opening night roster. I think that the lines in practice have showed us that enough. Guy's still not signed yet with the Vancouver Canucks. He's on a PTO. You're going to have to work on a contract before. And I don't think that'll take that long with a guy on a PTO who wants to play here. But to see him at 5-on-5, I think that's the part that's going to hurt. Like you mentioned, I think earlier, potentially he's playing on a line with Miller, playing on a third line with Miller. I don't think he's going to play on a fourth line because Travis Green's going to need some penalty killers somewhere. And he's going to have some of those guys playing on the fourth line. Like, I don't see us, like, it sounds, there's a lot of good things about Chiasson on the power play for sure. But to me, there's not a lot of great things at 5-on-5 that he's going to be able to bring. Am I wrong saying that?
I don't think so. Not at all.
Like, it doesn't feel like a player that good teams would have in their top nine. Like, I like the idea of Chiasson always as the way that we always bring up Sam Gagner, how Sam Gagner was used so well.
He could still be on the fourth line, though. You just bump Pod Colson up.
Yeah, I guess you go with Pod Colson.
Honestly, I think that is what's going to happen.
But is that just another name that can't kill penalties in Travis Green's lineup in the end? Because who's killing penalties right now with that lineup? Like,
DiGiuseppe, probably one of Pearson or Miller.
Is Horvat out there killing penalties?
I don't think they want to do Horvat.
So they have to use Miller then.
Yeah, Miller. It is going to be Miller.
So it'll be Miller and Pearson, and it'll be Dickinson and DiGiuseppe or Tyler Mott when Mott comes back.
Yes. Yeah, literally that. They had Justin Bailey killing penalties.
So then you look at this lineup. When Brandon Sutter comes back, does he bump Chiasson out, or does you have to see what happens with Chiasson on the power play? If he does enough, does Sutter end up being a healthy scratch?
One Patan?
Yeah, exactly. So there's that. Nick Patan's the guy that comes out. But I also wanted to mention something that was interesting that Travis said today. Even with the uncertainty of, you know, the future of Sutter and Besser here in the near future, you know, he said, he's like, I still haven't decided if Miller's going to start at center on opening night. We assume as much because this late in preseason and Miller hasn't played the wing once. Like, we assume that's where he's going to be. But he did make a point of saying, like, he hasn't decided that yet. So if you're moving him back to the wing when Sutter comes back, that's like, now you have that extra center, right? So
yeah, well, to
I think it's
point,
Patan that moves because you're moving a guy to the wing, right?
Yeah. To that
well,
point,
who
though,
would
with
be
Miller?
Your 4C then?
Sutter.
No, like, if they want to, but he's not going to be ready for opening night.
No, so that's what I'm saying is I think it Miller's going to stay center if Sutter's not ready.
Okay.
But if Sutter does come back,
well, yeah, then that makes sense.
I think
you're
moving Miller to the wing for sure.
For sure, yeah, 100%.
But what's the status right now? Because, man, I've had a lot of school and I've been at Abbey for the last, like, 24 hours. I've been busy the last 24 hours here. Is there any sort of update on Brock Besser that you guys have heard or anything? What is the date right now?
It sounds like I think Green was saying today that they hope he's going to skate tomorrow and that they're still optimistic that he can be ready for opening night.
Because that would be, I mean, that's a huge change to the lineup. That's something.
I think he'll be ready.
And we read into the skates and we read into the lines that we see. It's hard to read in there without Brock Besser if we're expecting him on opening night. Because, like, are you guys both thinking that the lotto line doesn't start on opening night? It feels like it's not going to be that way, right?
No, I think we would have seen them get a look.
I'm about to play the DJ Khaled. All I do is win then, because I've been telling you this for weeks.
But the main reason I think that we haven't seen it at all is because Besser's hurt as soon as PD comes back.
I wonder, like, is that the first, like, when, you know, when Travis is down two and he starts to shake things up, is that the first line that comes out in the third period when we see a line switch?
That,
like, the first shift of the game?
Horvat, Miller, Pedersen.
Yeah, we won't, like, that's the thing. I think
if Besser's hurt, that's what we see. Horvat, Miller, Pedersen. Or maybe Miller.
Three centers thrown together on one.
Or you throw
one.
Miller up with Garland and Pedersen.
Yeah, I think that could work.
As your, like, late push. But, you know, in the past, it has been, you know, Pedersen, Besser, Horvat. Like, that was the line that they would go to, right? And, you know, now with Miller in there as well, I don't know. Do you go to that if you don't have Besser? I think you might. But again, that's like final 2 minutes of the game sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean that's very late pushes. We'll see that for sure. Very late in the game. I just wonder what happens with, because we've talked about it so much in past episodes. Like there are so many options. Like you could go the things that we were projecting before training camp. Travis Green just came and just put a big FU to both of us, like all three of us. Really, yeah. It was like, no, I'm going to do this instead. And it seems like it's kind of like been enough for us to be like, yeah, okay, I could see why it would work this way. You know, when like it felt like the last couple of years, it was either one way where things would be like, maybe this will be okay, or everything was just going to go to crap. But man, I think we're already seeing that just with how lines have been moved around, where it's like, oh, maybe this could work. This could be a fine second line. This could be a good third line. But that's just because the team has really upgraded a lot in their forward group. And the defense core is something I want to talk about in the second half. But we'll throw to a quick ad break right here. And then there's a lot of problems in the defense. And we'll get into the defense core in the second half. But let's get to a quick ad break now. And we'll see you guys on the other side.
Muddlers Pink Lemonade. We are so excited to tell you guys about Muddler's Pink Lemonade, my drink of choice. You guys have all seen it by now. Faber and I went out drinking. That was my drink of choice first night.
I think that the catchphrase for this ad has to be, it's the only alcohol that Quads likes.
Absolutely. It's so good. It's absolutely the best pink lemonade on the market by far. A lot of these other drinks are just a little too sweet for me. Like, I don't really like that. And this is like a nice mix, because I also don't like when it tastes too much like alcohol. But this is like the perfect balance. There's a reason that it was the drink I got when we went to the Parallel Street Kitchen as well.
Absolutely, man. It is the sweet spot for Quads in the alcoholic beverage realm. You can find it, like you said, at Parallel 49 Street Kitchen and in a ton of liquor stores. All the BC liquor stores have it. It's the bright pink cans, Muddler's Pink Lemonade. Go out and try it today.
Alert, alert. Parallel 49 is bringing back one of its favorite beers of the winter. The Salty Scott is back, folks. The Scotch Ale we all know and love is now available across British Columbia in their government and private liquor stores. Enjoy a strong caramel flavor, a salty bite, and a generous 7.5% alcohol. It only takes one of these tall boys to get the night going. So go out and try a Parallel 49 Salty Scott today.
And a huge thank you to our sponsors. We mentioned it. Really good lunch at the Parallel Street Kitchen today. Quads, the $6 pretzel, I think you brought it up in the intro there. That thing came out buttery.
Oh, it was so good.
It looked good.
It was olive oil. It was butter. Yeah, it was olive oil.
Was that an Italian request you put in?
No, that's just how they made it.
Oh, just how it came. Okay.
Yeah, hot mustard too. Fantastic. It was so good. Check it out.
Would olive oil be better than butter? I feel like butter, a little melted butter on there might be a little bit better.
I really liked it.
It looked good. It was, man, I love a good pretzel.
Yeah, nice salt.
What's your favorite, like, salty snack, Harm? We and Quads have talked enough about this.
That's a really good question. Like, name some of these, like, name some options. And
I'm thinking, like pretzels, are you a chips guy, chips, pretzels guy?
Definitely chips.
What kind of chips?
Ketchup, for sure. Wow. I just said it off the top of my head. Whoops.
I had no idea you liked ketchup this much.
I think we need to call the episode something with ketchup. This was hilarious.
This is news to me. And like, we've been friends for a while now. Like, I had no clue you
liked ketchup. No, I mean, Lay's ketchup chips? Oh, the bomb.
Wow.
Have you ever dipped them in ketchup?
Oh, I've tried that.
Are you serious?
I was like, maybe like 10, 11 years old. And I was like, I have to try dipping ketchup chips with ketchup.
Tried it.
Everything tastes amazing with ketchup. And it did not taste amazing.
You've like been in a barbecue and you got like your fries, you got some chips, you got your burger, and there's ketchup there.
I'll eat cucumbers with ketchup.
Oh my God.
What? Damn. Like now to this day?
Okay, I haven't done it in like a couple of years, but yeah.
Wow.
Oh, I wouldn't mind it. I eat that today. Mm. You know what? Just for you boys, I will cut up cucumber. I will have some ketchup and then post on Twitter.
Oh man. You know what? People are gonna forget about mustard and watermelon pretty damn quick.
People are gonna think that this is us influencing you, him in particular, the big guy here.
People are coming at me on Twitter all the time. You're forcing Harm to take all these shots. Blah 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 blah. What the hell? He's an innocent child. He's posting this cucumber ketchup video on his own.
Yes, exactly. I'm not gonna post a video. I'll post a photo.
All right, fair enough. The photo will be good enough. One of the little tricks that I've always liked. This is, we'll get off the food topic in a second, but you know, like, you have steak, you have a baked potato, you got sour cream on the baked potato. I would always do a little sour cream on the steak, just to add a little like a little boost of cream on top of the steak. It's good.
No, it's not.
One person out there will agree with me. Sometimes you're eating your baked potato and your steak, and the a little sour cream falls off, and steak ends up dragging through it on accident. Maybe you get a bacon bit on there.
Oh my gosh, man! And this is something you like.
Oh, I do it like I learned this on accident, but I do that now. I used to fake it. Like sometimes I'd be, my mom would make dinner when I was a kid. I'd be like, oh, I put the sour cream on the baked potato. Oops, I slipped and a whole glob went on the steak. Whoops. Whoops. I guess I have to eat it with the sour cream on top, too.
Oh, my gosh.
I've done that before. I've done that.
Did the same with lasagna. Whoops.
Yeah. No, that was my stepmom who told me to do that.
Yeah. You're never going to live that one down either. It wasn't good, right? Like, it wasn't.
I put way too much on. Like, that picture, I don't know if it's even still out. I don't think I deleted it. Maybe I'll find it, but like... Yeah. That was before I had a lot of followers on this whole mean weird stuff. This didn't start this year. Like that was like one of the ones that really crossed the line.
Oh man, that's funny.
The Italians were coming at me after.
Yeah,
that.
We came out of the woodworks, man. We came out of the delis. Just
swinging salamis around.
Swinging salamis at you. Okay, you wanted to talk about goalies, so I will hit
not
the
yet.
Music.
Not yet. No, we're talking about defense first, and if there's time, we'll get to the goalies.
You were the one that wanted to talk goalies.
Yeah, I got it on the list, but it's at the bottom of the list.
Okay.
As
go ahead.
Should be.
Go ahead.
All right. So we got the Hughes and Pullman pairing. How does that make you guys feel about the second pairing on the team? Quads, we'll start with you because you love Tyler Myers. You think he's God's gift to defenseman. He's big, he's tall, he's strong, he's good looking. Everything about him is so good. So now he's going to be on a second pairing with Oliver Ekman-Larsson.
I'm interested to see how that pair defends against the rush. I'm very interested to see how they do with in-zone defense when you have Tyler Myers on that pairing. Honestly, I don't want to pass judgment before they're pairing, but on paper, that to me looks like a tire fire. Like,
sure.
Also, I think Oliver Ekman-Larsson's looked pretty damn good in the preseason, and I'm going to be interested to see how long, I guess, he can keep that up and how much of that is affected from seeing a lot of AHL competition. I'm interested to see how that pairing does long term because, one pairing I am confident in saying that I would be comfortable with was OEL and Pullman because they look good together. And, again, how much of that is AHL competition, that sort of thing. But again, like Hughes and Pullman, I liked the look of that last night as well. So again, it's early for both of these pairings, but on paper, you would think that OEL Myers would just be an absolute tire fire, but it wasn't last night. And I'm interested to see kind of how they're deployed. And I mean, we're getting a pretty good indication of it with last night's game against Edmonton, Saturday night against Edmonton. And, obviously the season opener is against Edmonton as well. So you're going to get a pretty good indication of like what you have in these defense pairings. Because look, they're going to have to defend that top line in Edmonton.
That's the interesting thing is like I look at Thursday's game and Quinn Hughes and Tucker Poulin match up against the McDavid line every single shift. Every single shift they match up against that line. But Harm, the way that we've heard Jim Benning and Travis Green talk about OEL makes it sound like his line is going to be the matchup pairing. But do you think that meant anything on Thursday that Hughes, had a positive control of possession numbers, positive Corsi up against McDavid and Dreisaitl? That's hard to do against those two guys. He does a great job in the preseason game. And, we always talk, AHL competition that they're going up against. This was not that. This was McDavid and Dreisaitl with Jesse Puljujärvi playing against Hughes and Pullman. They held their own in that one. Do you think that is the type of thing we see? Or like Quad said, is it going to be a test on opening night that now Myers and OEL are matching up against the McDavid and Dreisaitl line?
Yeah, it's really interesting because I wouldn't be surprised if they switch things up and go with Hughes-Pullman as a matchup pair just because, I think they look at OEL as someone they're comfortable with in terms of playing matchup minutes. And I think with Pullman, they really like the idea of pairing him with OEL and having his foot speed there. And, Pullman's had that experience in Winnipeg going up against top lines as well. So there's two guys there. And Hughes has done it as well in 2019-20, obviously with Chris Tanev. And the one guy in the top four who hasn't historically defended against top lines is Tyler Myers. And so it's kind of a process of elimination, right? Where it's like in an ideal world, I think they'd like to go OEL Pullman, but that would mean going Hughes Myers, and they're not going to go Hughes Myers because they don't trust them together defensively, which I wouldn't either. So you kind of have to go Hughes Pullman. And, the idea of you know, I'm not worried about OEL. Like, long term with the contract, yes, I'm worried about how he ages. But for the short term, for this season, I like he's honestly on this blue line, he's one of the least of my worries. I think he's by far going to be the second best defenseman on this team. He's going to bounce back, I think. It's just when he's paired with Tyler Myers and you know, Myers can do some things offensively, but defending the rush, it's always shocked me for a guy that is as big as Myers is, has as long of a reach, is generally pretty mobile. His footwork is just not good. And the idea of OEL Myers trying to defend against Connor McDavid in transition, like, that kind of scares me to the point where I almost think, like, Hughes Pullman, those are a couple of pretty good skaters. I still think Hughes has work to do in terms of transition defense, yeah, but he's still got that matchup experience. And so I do wonder if they'll ultimately lean towards Hughes Pullman.
I just wonder, is that, so you talk about them just being a good matchup pairing, like that, what you think OEL and Myers is going to be the matchup pairing. But do you think that it's just McDavid and Draisaitl that we see the matchup because of the skating so much better between Hughes and Pullman? Or do you think that the OEL Myers will match up against all the other team's best lines just because they're not the speedster like McDavid is? Or do you think the top lines are going to get a good taste of Hughes and Pullman all game long?
We'll see. I mean, I'll be honest, I don't know what they're thinking on that front. If it was me, I would trot out Hughes Pullman as my matchup pair. Just because, yeah, again, I think for Tyler Myers, if you're going to get the best out of him, I don't want him defending against top players. I just, you know, let him pinch, let him play, let him move the puck, let him be free offensively. I don't want him chasing the play, and that's where I personally would be worried about deploying him against tough competition.
Yeah, so maybe that helps that pairing a lot, though, too. You know, not having to go against top lines. If Hughes and Pullman are able to take on top lines, which I'm still not sure if they can. Not sure if they can. I don't think anyone in the Canucks organization is even sure if they can. But if you're looking at those two top four pairings as they are right now, I'm more confident in Hughes and Pullman being, yes, able to defend for sure.
Yeah.
So that's our top four. I think that's, nothing's going to shake around with that. I still think there are some questions on the third pairing, even as one preseason game comes in. You guys were at the skate today. What was the third pairing today?
I missed it.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Oh my goodness. All right.
Shen on the ice today?
Instead of talking about what you guys were at the Prague, I'm at friggin' Abbotsford practice. They don't have numbers on their jerseys. I could tell you who the third pairing was because there was only four defensemen, so there was no third pairing. But we're talking about the third pairing for the Canucks.
Sorry, Rathbone Shen was the third pairing.
So that's opening
the
night.
Third pairing opening night.
Is Rathbone Shen the opening?
Hunt, Bowie, Yolevi's off this team. Mm-hmm. You know, as we've been saying for a couple weeks, Yolevi didn't do himself any favors to start. It's over. He's not on this team.
So they're waving Yolevi instead of Bowie, you guys think?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think Bowie is more valuable than Yolevi overall. I do. Mm-hmm. I think Bowie gives you more than Yolevi does.
So opening night, Rathbone and Shen is going to be the third pairing for the Canucks. No thought of Brad Hunt potentially on
the
right side.
Are we sure on that? Like,
that's what I'm saying. I don't think so.
I don't know if Rathbone is a certainty to be the third pair.
You think
guy.
Rathbone is less of a certainty than Shen?
I think Rathbone's made this team. I think he's going to be on the third
pairing.
He's
made the team for sure.
I think he's going to be on the third pairing opening night. I think the question is if he's going to play with Shen or Hunt. If they want to play Hunt,
I don't think they can go Rathbone-Hunt because then you don't have enough penalty killers.
That's a good point. I think Shen makes the team.
And Shen will make the team for sure.
But I think that's your third pairing. Who are you thinking?
Well, what if Hunt comes in for Rathbone? I mean, I'm not saying that that's what I would do, but like...
How dare you?
Well, here's the thing. Like,
he's a friend of the show.
Rathbone's been excellent offensively. I still think he's had moments where it just comes down to what is the coaching staff's risk tolerance? What do they want out of a third pair, right? Because Rathbone's going to create more offensively. And he's going to be a lot more exciting and creative, dynamic. But there have been moments where, you know, he's a rookie. He's going to make mistakes from time to time. And I guess that's what Luke Shen is there for. But Hunt can do a lot of the same puck moving. Is not going to be as dynamic, but he can be a little bit more reliable and stable. So, I mean, I'm not saying that I'd put Hunt over Rathbone. I'm genuinely curious if Rathbone is a lock for the third pair job. He's making the team for sure. It's right. Just, is he going to be on the opening night lineup?
I think it's going to come down to what Travis Green, if Travis Green believes that you're getting a better Luke Shen with Brad Hunt, I think that's what it's going to come down to. Like, maybe the things that Jack Rathbone is going to do ends up putting Shen in a lot worse situations, right? And makes him a worse player for your team. When Hunt, he's not going to take as many, you know, I mean, he is. Like, he's an aggressive defenseman, but he's not at the same level as Jack Rathbone is. So I wonder if that helps make things a little bit easier on Shen, who, you know, without Hamonic here, they're asking Shen to do a lot, to come in and just be, even just be a third pairing guy to start the season. I think that's asking Shen more than what we all kind of predicted was going to be asked of him at when he signed the contract. He was signed, I think, to come in as a seventh, eighth guy, you know, be your fourth right pair, like the guy that the number four in your depth chart for right defense. That's what Shen was signed here for. He wasn't signed here to be in the opening night roster, but now he's there. I just wonder if there's a lot more risk with having Shen in your lineup if Rathbone's beside him instead of Hunt. That's the way I can see it being for Hunt getting the opening night lineup, is if Green just wants to play Hunt because he doesn't think it's going to be as worrisome having him with Shen. Like, I think that Rathbone is better. He's a better defenseman. I think he's looked, I don't even think Hunt's looked better defensively than Rathbone. Like, everybody's been really high on Hunt throughout this whole camp. I just haven't, like, I haven't seen a game where I've been like, Brad Hunt had a really good game tonight. I haven't said that once all season long. And I think I'm in the minority here. I think a lot of people have really liked what they've seen for Brad Hunt, but he's really just not impressed me with anything yet.
But what coaches want out of an ideal third pair guy, a lot of times, is a guy you never notice. Like an Oscar Fantenberg.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, Hunt's not Fantenberg. Hunt, I think, is a better player than Fantenberg. And I definitely get your argument. He hasn't stood out, but I think he's generally been pretty solid, and he hasn't made many mistakes. So, yeah, I'm curious to see what direction they lead
The thing is you want a defenseman who plays mistake-free hockey, right? And, you know, I get what Harmon's saying, and it kind of comes back to this. I was talking about this with Daniel Wagner, Pastopoulos, about, you know, Rathbone and Ylevi we were still talking about at the time. And it was just like, he's like, yeah, Ylevi, you know, like, people on Twitter are always bringing it up to me. They're like, oh, Ylevi makes less mistakes than Rathbone. It's like, yeah, but he's no threat offensively, right? Like,
Ylevi still makes more mistakes.
Exactly. So there's not only that, but the thing is, when people look at Rathbone and they see him bobble a puck, it's like, yeah, but he just rushed it from his own end all the way to the other end, right? And the baseball analogy is like, if you have a shortstop who doesn't make an effort for balls, and, you know, anything that's out of his reach, he won't dive for it. Well, he's never going to make an error. Those are all base hits. But then you have the shortstop who's laying out and then bobbling the ball once he gets it. That's an E6, right?
No, it's not. Not if you lay out.
Yeah, of course it is. Absolutely.
Not if you lay out.
Absolutely.
No, it's not.
I didn't think it was.
Yeah. Yes, it still is.
No, it's not. If you're in the outfield and you try to make a diving catch, that's not an error.
No, I just said shortstop.
Yeah.
If a shortstop lays out for a ball that the scorekeeper deems is, like, playable, right? And he bobbles it, it's an error.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it is.
Not if he lays out for it.
Not if he lays out full stretch. Absolutely.
Oh, no, my gosh. Not. I'm going to have to pull up a rule book on you guys. No, I was an umpire.
Well, apparently not a good one. That's not an error if you lay out.
I mean, my extensive baseball experience is playing MLB The Show. So yeah,
if you're saying
I don't know if I'm the,
like,
best person in this argument.
Here's what Quads is about to say. If you, like, lay out and then get up and bobble the ball, that's an error. But yeah, if you lay out and, like, stop the ball.
Yeah.
And you don't get the out at first.
No.
That's a base hit.
Yeah. That is a base hit.
Yes.
But if you lay out, stop the ball, and you come up and you can't make the play.
Okay, well, now that's completely different.
Yeah, no, whatever. It's the same
thing. I thought you meant on the dive, you bobble it.
Yeah, I called exactly what you were about to say.
Okay, this is aside from the point.
What are we even talking about?
We got sidetracked.
We did get sidetracked. Okay. I'm looking it up.
We're on the same page now. We're on the same page now.
Yeah, we're on the same page, because you're just going to repeat what I just said.
We're on the same page now.
Okay.
So Rathbone versus Hunt. Back to this here for a second. I just think that, like, I think we're all in the camp of we'd like to see Rathbone be the guy. I'm in the camp of he's still a more defensively, like, he doesn't hurt you defensively as much as people think when they make this argument of it could be Hunt. He doesn't hurt you like that defensively, but the way that I kind of presented it to you, Harm, was like, I do think that it puts more pressure on Shen having Rathbone there. Having Hunt there takes pressure off of Shen because he doesn't have to deal with the guy going out and potentially giving up two-on-ones. That's what I'm saying about this pairing.
A good point.
And that's why I think Green is... I don't think Rathbone does start the season. I'd love him to be there. We would all like to be... we think that he could bring a lot to a third pairing. I just don't see Travis Green doing it when he has the option with Brad Hunt, especially without... If Hamonic was here and Hamonic ended up playing on the third pairing... We've talked about this in the offseason, how good of a third pair we'd like that to be. If it was Rathbone and Hamonic, good third pairing in the NHL to me. That's a good third pairing. But I think it's going to end up being Hunt just because of taking the pressure off of Shen as a guy who probably isn't an 82-game NHL player right now.
I totally see what you're saying. The reason I still think it's Rathbone is because not only has the guy appeared in like every preseason game, but these ones that really matter, and Travis is saying, like, this is my NHL lineup, like, this is what I'm going to do. Look, he was skating there on the third pairing today. Like, there's a reason that it's not Hunt in that spot, right? I think he's there opening night. I think he's on that third pairing. I think he's won the job.
I have no idea, just so you guys know. I don't know.
I think he's won the job.
I think we learned that from Travis, even in his post game on Thursday, was like, listen, like, there are still decisions he has to make.
Like, yeah, so, yeah, obviously.
No, I'm saying, but like there are, I think the decisions he has to make are a couple line combinations in the bottom six and the third pairing. That's the only decisions he has left to make. Do you think, but Quads, you're the only one who's not in the camp of we think Travis is going to go with Hunt. Do you seriously think Travis Green's going to start Jack Rathbone? You mentioned we saw it in practice, so that does mean that way.
I do
think Travis he's going to go with the. This is the thing that Green.
For the record,
has
I'm not in either of your guys' camp.
Oh yeah, Quads is. Or yeah, Harm's not.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I can see the case for both.
Well, I don't know either, but I'm just guessing. You gotta
pick a side and go hard on
Harm, we pay you enough. You gotta come in here and pick sides between us here.
Pick a side and you go hard on it. That's what we do on this show.
Harm is a bigger free agent bust than Tyler Myers the way he's not picking sides here.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Pay me $6 million, then you can call me.
then we'll get a take.
Can we get to some goalie talk, please?
Okay. Final thing. Hold on. We got to put Harm on the spot. Opening night. Who's the left side third pairing? What is it, Harm?
Harmon Dial on the record. We're going to post a Twitter graphic with this. It says Harmon Dial on who's going to start.
Harmon with third a pairing. Bottle of ketchup holding it up. Harmon's lock of the week with his ketchup here.
I don't know.
Wow.
What a
solid. I would need to really think about this, probably make some calls, and I'd have a better guess then. I don't want to randomly throw a dart at the board when I have no clue.
We are about to waste probably 3 minutes of the podcast here. You can probably make a quick call. Quads, hit the goalie intro.
Oh yeah, he shouldn't have done that public knowledge. That's a big no-no. I don't know. You know, I can't really give the time and date, or else I feel like Nona's shoe will be flying across North America right and hit me in the head.
I think we spent half an hour talking about a backup goaltender.
All right, get out of here, Woodley.
All right.
Favor's going to be.
Favor's going to be very pissed. So, you know, I don't like to say bad things about goaltenders.
All right, that's it. The goalie intro. The best part of the goalie segment here on the show. We could probably just wrap it up there, actually. People have mentioned that we could just play the intro. We don't actually have to talk about goalies. But I do want to bring up one little thing. I don't mean to come out with, just say it out loud, but, I don't know about Yaroslav Halak, man. Something worries me about him and Net. Something on Thursday night's game, maybe it's because I've seen the way that Demko moves in the crease. And then seeing DiPietro move in the crease, and now seeing Halak move around in the crease, that first goal with Draisaitl scored, rips it on the short side over his shoulder, so he doesn't get to the post quick enough. And then everyone after that, he was overdoing it. Like, he was attached to his whole body, and like everything was, it just, there was a lot of things that maybe just from watching Mikey for a few games and seeing what good mechanics look like, something about Halak worried me a little bit.
This brings a tear to my eye because how many times have we been at a camp or a practice and I turn to you and I say, look how Mikey's integrating on the posts. And I explain to you the mechanics and now you're picking up on it.
All right.
I'm having an effect on you. I am.
All right. And Mike DiPietro.
Am I going to have to be the anti-goalie guy now?
Yes, oh, well, man. You should. I got
all this goalie gibberish. Just stop the puck.
Speaking of, we got
there's no mechanics. Just stop the puck.
Kevin Woodley, I called him for 650 the other day. He was screaming at me about the poll question, which we forgot to tweet out. Shout out to Blue Orca Memorabilia.
Yeah, at Fuel the Fan on Twitter. Go check them out for all your Canucks memorabilia needs. They got lots of good stuff, like signed photos and stuff. Go check them out.
A lot of Horvat stuff on there.
A lot of Horvat stuff.
Horvat's some Demko stuff, too.
Yeah, Demko stuff.
We're still going to post the tweet.
Yes.
We'll post the
poll question. We're contractually obliged.
Yes, we just completely. Normally, we're pretty good. We do it in the break, but Quads was off friggin' taking a piss or whatever he was doing for 7 minutes there in the bathroom.
At Fuel the Fan. I was in the bathroom for 7 minutes. It was number one. At Fuel the Fan on Twitter. Go check them out.
All right. Harmon was had time to run to the convenience store, get a bag of ketchup chips, and come back.
Whole question. What was Quaz doing in the bathroom?
Or what's the best thing you can dip ketchup chips into?
Oh, man. Watermelon.
All right. That's it for the goaltender talk. Mikey DiPietro got sent down to the AHL.
Yep, Arjustilov was on the ice today.
Yeah, well, you know what? Let's just do it right here to the prospects report. Don't have a lot, but I was out in Abbotsford today at training camp. Talked to Trent Cole, talked to Ashton Sautner, and I did actually talk to Cole about. I talked to both actually Sautner and Cole about DiPietro coming back, and you know Sautner, I forgot. Like, I was thinking, I was like, where the hell was Ashton Sautner all of last year? Like, and he was on the what do they even call? I forgot the taxi squad. So he was on the taxi squad like all of last year. He got those two games in with Winnipeg. He was like, man, he was saying like, I just feel like I haven't played a game in a year and a half. Like he was telling me, and I asked him about Mikey and he said, you could see Mikey grow throughout the start of that. Like the way that he looked at the start of them working together on the taxi squad to the end of it. He was saying that like the way that he grew in that year, people don't understand how much it really was. So like,
wow.
I tell you what Mikey's going to do this year and Abbotsford is going to be amazing.
It's going to be, it's going to be ridiculous.
It's going to be ridiculous. So I asked Sautner a little bit and I know he's not a prospect or anything, but I think he's going to be the captain out there in Abbotsford. And it was something I asked him about. I said like, you know, what would it be like to wear, you know, he said he's like, I've worn a letter before. He's like, he's here in the organization again, but that's a thing that's up to the coaches to make a decision. So I think he's going to be the captain. I can't think of another name on the Abbotsford Canucks who makes more sense than Ashton Sautner. So to hear that, you know, to hear him be excited about it and excited for what they're going to do with that Abbotsford team last year, I'll have a little article and a write up from some other things.
Good.
But talking with Trent Cole, Cole was like, man, this is a really young team. Like, he's like, I didn't really expect this team to be this young out here in Abbotsford. Carroll Plastic's a guy who I liked today at the training camp. He was skating around well, obviously mentioning stuff about Klimovich. The feeling that I got, and this isn't like anything for sure, but the feeling that I got with some answers when I was asking about Klimovich was like, yeah, he's down in the A, but like, and maybe Harm, you can help me. He can still get sent to the Q though.
Yes, he can.
I had the way that Cole was talking about him, I wouldn't be shocked to see him go to the Q still.
Can you expand on that? Like, how was he talking?
Well, here's the thing. So Benning initially told me in the summer that their plan was to send Klimovich down to the Q. Of course, he had a great camp. And, you know, I think this is kind of a little bit complex because of the ELC situation. So because Klimovich was 18 when he signed his contract, he can play this year in the AHL and it won't burn a year of his ELC. Now, on the flip side, if he gets sent down to the Q, he's not only ineligible to play in the AHL this season, but also next year. So I think this is just the Canucks doing their due diligence, getting an extra look at him, seeing him in a pro environment again. So they have as much information as they can before they make their decision, because it's kind of an important one in terms of it's not only this year, but you're committing to where he's going to play next year. And of course, he could get loaned to Europe or whatnot, but you know, Abbotsford, you obviously have more
stop there too, right? That's what they probably don't want, is to control, like bounce him around. Yeah. You know, I guess maybe that part really threw a wrench in it to me when I first learned that it was going to have to be 2 years committed to the CHL. If he were to go that route, I mean, they can't loan him back to the AHL team in the end. I think they have to keep him here. I think they have to keep him in the A now. I don't think that you want to commit 2 years. I think the thing is like, yeah, what if he goes to the Q this year and he rips it up this year? What's he going to do gaining another year there?
Europe?
Where Europe are you thinking? Are you thinking the K? Are you thinking the SHL?
It could be
the KHL worries me with a guy like Klimovich.
Well, you'd get to handpick your spot, right?
Right.
It wouldn't be like a Pod Colson situation where he's stuck on a team that doesn't care about the guy.
Mm-hmm. I would almost think like a different league might be better.
Here's the thing. I've tried like talking to, just scouts and other people who work on the development side. And, you know, their thought process is always when you have an 18-year-old, should almost always go back to junior unless he's like a top 10 pick. And the reason why is it's you generally want your prospects to be overripe, if anything. It's fine if Klimovich goes down and, you know, spends a year ripping up the queue. It's not going to necessarily harm him. But what could harm him is if he goes down to the A, he has trouble applying his tools, loses confidence, and now all of a sudden you're stunting his offensive growth. And so, you know, if you rush him along too soon, it's just one of those things where development-wise, I think organizations are cognizant of trying not to put too much on a prospect's plate. The whole idea is like, yeah, he could probably do it, but just go out and prove it, right? It's like the whole Ken Holland used to do in Detroit with prospects. And granted, I think he did it to an exaggerated extent, but I think with prospects, you generally want to know for 110% sure that they can dominate a certain level before you graduate them prematurely. Because if you graduate them prematurely, I mean, there's a risk there for sure. But again, I also see the other side of the coin where it's like, yeah, I mean, it would be nice if you could develop some of those pro-ready habits in the A, but
I think the confidence is opposite for me. I think that the way that Klimovich has wanted to come here, play for the Canucks, everything, obviously he's not going to make the NHL, even though he could have said that in all of his interviews going into it. To now send him away from this organization that has really brought him in with open arms and a fan base that's open, or like the fans in Abbotsford are excited to see what Klimovich can do on the ice, even if it's just a flashy play every three games. Like, I think that keeping him here is better for his confidence than sending him to another team now in a league that he has no idea about. I think that hurts his confidence even more. And don't get like the on ice stuff. I think he gains confidence scoring, you know, a ton of goals in the QMJHL. I do. But I think that just like overall confidence in general, I think keeping him with the AHL and trying to work some things with him in your organization is something that we haven't seen the Canucks try and do with a guy who's 18 years old, really. In the AHL anyways, like they've rushed guys like McCann and Virtanen and tried that. But to me, I think that keeping him in the A gives him a good chance to work with the organization and really work out the things that they want to see.
Well, how many guys from this year's draft class are going to play at the AHL or at an equivalent level, especially ones outside the first round? It's a big ask. He's 18, just fresh out. And here's the other thing too, like the Belarusian League, and I think I've mentioned this before, but yeah, he ripped up the Belarusian League, but if you look, and again, someone sent me the example. I think one of his teammates was Danil Stepanov or something.
Yeah.
And this guy had like more points than Klimovich by quite a bit. And the year before, like literally the year before in the WHL, he had like something to the tune. He didn't even hit double digits points in the WHL.
Wow. Yeah.
And then but he was like shocked, 2 points though. Per game in the Belarusian League. Like the Belarusian League sucks.
Yeah. I would, that player that you mentioned, I already forgot. It's a huge jump. I would doubt that player has as many pro level skills in North America as Klimovich does.
For sure.
And I think that's the thing. It's like, you know that there's things there with, like, even watching him skate today, like his skating still sticks out in an AHL practice. Like, it stuck out compared to, man, like, he was skating on a line. Like, he would skate against a line that had Vinny Arsenault on it, and he's skating circles around Vinny Arsenault. But then, another thing, like, the thing that you need to see him work on, I even tweeted out the video of this one. Sautner comes in on this drill where they were both kind of, like, in between the blue line and the red line, and they had, and then the puck went to one guy's side. He picked it up, and he went in on the goaltender that way. And Sautner just beat Klimovich around the side, just leaned on him and just went right to the net and got a good scoring chance off. To me, that's the thing that needs to be worked on. Because the other, when the coin's on the other side, I don't think that's even a saying, but when it's on the other side, like when Klimovich is driving and doing things offensively against Sautner, he looks fine. But when Sautner, who's a defenseman, is going up against Klimovich, Klimovich just doesn't look good there. So those are the things that he really needs to work on, to me.
Well, the other thing too is like my only worry sometimes is with the AHL level. And again, from what we've seen in camp, I've been really impressed. Like, I just don't want a guy to lose puck touches. And that's the biggest thing where it's like going into the A and it's with any level that's a lot quicker and more challenging is you want a scorer like Klimovich, wherever he's playing, to have a lot of touches with the puck, to be making plays offensively. And yes, it's important to round out the other parts of his game, but he has a lot of time to do that as well. Again, he's only 18, yeah, and it's like I want Klimovich to just be making plays offensively. And it's like, is he going to be able to continue developing his offensive game? Maybe. I mean, he's been impressive at camp.
But he's getting first power play unit time if he's playing on the Abbotsford team. I mean, there's not a lot of other great scoring for. I would rather, you know, from what we saw in camp or from what I've seen over the past couple of years, I think I'd rather
that
have.
That HL team's going to be stacked, man.
Well, I mean, once you get certain guys down there, yeah, I think there's a few players that would be better offensively. Like Carson Folk's not getting PP1 over Klimovich. Klimovich is a better scorer than Carson Folk is right now.
Well, especially when someone like a Mott comes back. What if like a Nick Batan gets sent down?
Yeah.
Or like even a McEwen's going to get sent down.
But even
down,
a
probably.
Second, like he is playing on a power play unit.
Maybe.
For sure.
Are we really talking about the Abbotsford Canucks power play right now?
Seriously, you did a show where you talked about USA's third string goaltender, and
hey,
you're going to tell me that
matters.
This is...
At least that's an NHL goaltender.
This is the minor league team of the organization.
Klimovich's development matters, Quads.
Yeah, why do you hate Klimovich so much anyways?
I don't hate Klimovich. I'm just saying I would rather hear about John Gibson, Connor Hellebuyck.
Let's talk about Koskinvuo. Yeah. I guess he really matters.
Because what have you even watched from Koskinvuo? I asked you the other day on the show.
He's a long-term project.
840 save percentage.
Yeah.
Yeah, the chase for 900 is on. Also, a little bet I have with JD Burke. 905 save percentage for Halak. I'm saying under, he's saying over. Mr. Positivity all of a sudden. JD Burke, positive about the Canucks.
That's what they call him.
Yeah.
I think, especially hearing that from Cole, and I'll get back to that a little bit here. Just hearing the way that Cole said, he's like, you know, we got him here. Like, I'll get the exact quote out, but he's
kind of
saying,
yeah, I
want to
hear why you think this, like why you have this vibe. That
the way that he was saying was like, you know, we got him here for a little bit now. We've had a pretty good look at him. We'll see what happens kind of thing. It wasn't that exact quote. The exact quote, I'll have it in the article for sure, but it was very close to what I just said there. Actually, now that I said it out loud, it was, you know, they do have him here for a little bit. You know, I asked him about some of the players, like, because I asked about Kirill Plasek, because, like, Plasek's an interesting one for me. Coming out of the Czech second division last year, like, yes, he played in the Czech first division, but it's the same thing that people talk about Pearson. They're like, oh, he played 4 games in the SHL. He played 80 seconds. Same with Plasek. He played very small minutes when he was in the Czech first division. He was a majority of the season Czech second division. That's a huge jump to the AHL, man. For a 21-year-old, for Plasek to, come over here and look pretty decent, one of the guys that I thought stuck out on the ice again today.
I like him.
I like him too. And I liked him in camp. Like, I really did like him in camp. I thought he moved well. And that was the things that Cole was talking about. Like, he skates well. He handles the puck well. He has a good shot. Like, he's going to find a way to get into the top end of our lineup was what Cole was saying. And so, you know, that's another interesting name out there. And yeah, I'll be interested to see what happens with Klimovich because he's going to end up being the big story, right? Like, Klimovich is going to be the big story in the end if he is out there in Abbotsford. But, like, you know, you bring up a lot of good points about why the Cube might be a better spot for him, anyways. So, I think we'll wrap up the prospect conversation there, and I think we'll wrap up the episode there. Harm, it's been a good one here. People have learned a little bit about you that maybe they didn't know with the whole ketchup chips dipping into ketchup thing. I don't know about that. I'm excited to see the reaction to the cucumber and ketchup picture. Even if it doesn't even have to be a video, just the picture, people are going to think I broke you with like the bad food takes thing. So excited for that. Thanks for stopping by for another episode. We'll see you in a couple weeks again here, unless Quads gets sick or something, because I don't get sick. I don't miss episodes here on this show. Quads, he's ready to leave. He's already radio show second week. He's already not showing up to that. He's lost here. I'm committed to this thing here. So we'll see. But Harm, thanks for stopping by again, man.
Thanks, boys.
And we'll see you in 2 weeks here. We're going to be deep into the season at that point, man. There's going to be a lot more to talk about. So we'll wrap things up there for my first co-host, David Quadrelli, the new co-host, Harmon Dial, and myself, Chris Faber. Thank you so much for tuning into another episode of the Canucks Conversation.
Thanks for listening to Canucks Conversation, delivered by DoorDash. Hit the subscribe button to never miss an episode.
How about keep it to a thank you, Jim?
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.